This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on African News Tonight.
IOM specifically, our focus so far was mainly on IDP camp, where we provide camp coordination and camp management activity. We also provide over there shelter and wash. So
that's Fabienne Sambusi, International Organization for Migration Chief of Mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo, about the millions of displaced in the country. Details coming up also. Liberia prepares for its runoff presidential elections tomorrow. And a South African legal expert is elected to be a judge on the International Court of Justice. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees warned today its operations in war-torn Gaza would shut down within 2 days due to fuel shortages as fighting rages between Israel and Hamas. Israel has blocked fuel from entering Gaza since October 7th, when Hamas militants stormed across the border and killed about 1,400 people and kidnapped some 240 others. Israel hit back with a bombing campaign that has killed more than 11,000 people in Gaza, mostly civilians, and cut off supplies of water, electricity, fuel, and food to the territory of 2.4 million people. Some food and medical supplies now are allowed in, but aid workers say it is far from enough. Fighting between Israel forces and Palestinian militants outside Gaza's largest hospital, Al-Shifa, has prompted thousands of people to flee, but health officials today said hundreds of patients and displaced people remained inside. Israel says it's not targeting medical facilities, but says that Hamas fighters often hide their operations, facilities, and troops near them. The 27 European Union nations today condemned Hamas for what they described as the use of hospitals and civilians as human shields. EU Foreign Affairs Chief Joseph Borrell said the bloc also asked Israel for maximum restraint in targeting in order to avoid human casualties. Israel is facing growing calls from around the world for a ceasefire as civilian casualties mount in Gaza. Also today, Israel reports there has been shelling into the country from Hezbollah militants in Lebanon. It said an electrical worker was killed in the firing. For more on the latest from the conflict, we have reporter Linda Gradstein on the line in Jerusalem. Welcome, Linda.
Thank you, Yehia.
So how are things where you are today as well as over the weekend?
Well, in Jerusalem, things are quiet, but the fighting is definitely intensifying in Gaza. And Israeli troops are at the gates of the Shifa Hospital. And the staff there says that they are really fighting to keep the newborn babies alive. And some of them, babies that had been in incubators, they took them out, wrapped them in foil, and put hot water next to them. That's according to the director of the medical center telling Al Arabi television. So the situation is very difficult in Gaza. At the same time, Israel says that there was firing on Israeli troops from another hospital, from the Al-Quds Hospital in Gaza City, and that they opened fire on troops and that they were embedded within a group of civilians at the entrance to the hospital. So that just shows you sort of some of the complications of this situation. In Al-Shifa Hospital, which you spoke about earlier, there are believed to be about 7,000 displaced people and another 1,500 patients and medical staff.
And Linda, there are rising concerns about, you know, the fighting near Gaza hospitals and about shortages of fuel and supplies in hospitals. We've talked about the fuel shortage.
Yes. Now, Israel says that Hamas has plenty of fuel and has been, you know, hoarding fuel. Israel also released a video showing soldiers bringing 300 liters of fuel and leaving it right at the entrance to the Shifa hospital. The hospital workers say that, first of all, they were too scared to go outside and get it, and they said that that's only enough to power the hospital for half an hour. So there's, again, debates about this. Israel also says that it's opened a humanitarian corridor from the hospital to allow anybody who wants to leave to be able to flee to the south, where there is more humanitarian aid, there is water, there is food, but there's, you know, any UN shelters are completely overrun. And in addition, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees called UNRWA just said that it will have to shut down its operations in Gaza within 2 days because of fuel shortages. And there are hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in Gaza who are sheltering in UN facilities like schools.
Israel has said it will pause fighting for several hours a day to allow people to flee northern Gaza and aid to reach those who cannot leave. What is the status of those pauses? Have they been happening?
As far as I know, they have not been happening as in terms of a complete cessation of fighting. Israel has said that there are corridors that they've opened up to allow people who want to flee from the north to the south, and tens of thousands of people have taken advantage of those corridors in the last few days. And so now the situation is that most Palestinians, most of the 2.3 million Palestinians in Gaza are in the south of the country, but there simply are not the facilities to absorb them. And people who are sheltering in schools and places like that talk of terribly overcrowded conditions, you know, 4 toilets for 1,000 people, things like that. And they're worried about the spread of disease and other problems.
And lastly, as condemnation of the conflict has grown around the world, stoking anti-Israeli sentiment, what is the Israeli government doing about that, reversing that mindset?
Well, in fact, the Israel's foreign minister today said that diplomatic pressure is beginning to increase, and he thinks that Israel only has another 2 to 3 weeks before the pressure gets very intense. I think Israel has sort of launched a campaign of releasing more information and more videos to show, that to sort of prove that their claims are correct. So, for example, today they said they found all of these munitions on the floor of the sea that Hamas had been using. Hamas came in the October 7th massacre by the sea, by the land, and by the air. And so they released a video of the Navy divers bringing these things up. They released a video of what they said was a Palestinian with an RPG shooting from the entrance of the Al-Quds hospital at troops. So I think they're trying to release more information, even some of it perhaps classified, as a way of trying to fight some of these allegations. Interestingly, the European Union, which often is very critical of Israel, today issued a statement criticizing Hamas for using civilians as human shields.
Linda Gradstein on the latest from Jerusalem. Thank you for your input, Linda.
Thank you.
Liberians vote for a new president tomorrow in a runoff between President George Weah and Joseph Boakai. Weah had 43.83% of Boakai, 43.4% in the first round of voting on October 10th. The French news agency AFP reports that campaigning for the runoff has been low-key, with each side scrambling to secure endorsements from the 18 contenders who lost in the first round. In the 2017 second round election, Weah beat Boakai with 61.5% against 38.5%. Weah entered politics after a career as a striker for top European teams and is popular among Liberia's large youth population. Many voters see him as approachable and in touch with the public, but AFP reports some voters complain he has not tackled corruption nor improved life for the country's poor. Boakai was vice president from 2006 to 2018 under Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, Africa's first elected female president. He has held various state and oil industry jobs. He had pledged to improve infrastructure and invest in agriculture. However, some voters see his age, 78, as a hindrance. We'll have more coverage on Liberia's election tomorrow, and you can check out voaafrica.com for developments. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, escalating conflict in the East have displaced millions of people. The International Organization for Migration is intensifying its efforts to address the complex and persistent crisis in the DRC as the number of internally displaced people climbs across the country. IOM's Chief of Mission in the DRC, Fabien Sambusi, tells me that for the first time, nationwide displacement data has been collected in all 26 provinces through IOM's displacement tracking matrix. The most recent escalation of the conflict, Fabien told me, has uprooted more people in less time than seen before.
I was saying that for the first time ever, IOM performed displacement tracking matrix activities in the entire DRC in the whole country. And we had the figure that get out of this operation reaching a little bit less than 7 million IDPs in DRC today.
Citizens in the eastern DRC have suffered years of rebel conflict as well as recurrent natural disasters, fueling one of the largest humanitarian crises in the world. IOM chief in the DRC, Sambusi, says his organization is doing its best to alleviate the suffering in the eastern provinces of northern Kivu, south Kivu, Ituri, and Tanganyika.
IOM specifically, our focus so far was mainly on IDP camp, where we provide camp coordination and camp management activity. We also provide over there shelter and wash, so construction of shelter, construction of emergency latrines and provision of water, as well as provision of mental health in some of the camp.
As far as collaboration with the government to help the displaced and bring stability to the region, Sambusi says,
regarding the management of the IDP camp, we have counterparts at the provincial level, whether it's through the National Commission for Refugee or for the Division of Humanitarian Affairs, which are co-managing and co-administrating the IDP camp together with IOM.
The conflict between the movement M23 rebels and militias loyal to DRC's government has intensified in North Kivu since early October, particularly north of the provincial capital Goma. The IOM says, as of October, about 5.6 million IDPs were living in the eastern provinces. Fabian says in North Kivu, up to 1 million have been displaced due to the conflict with M23.
Yes, it's affecting our work very much. I mean, I just returned with the IOM Deputy Director General of a field trip in North Kivu and Ituri, and not later than this morning when we visited the camp of Bulengo next to Goma, we had an influx of something around 10,000 new IDPs that have been moving out of the front line in my city.
That was IOM Chief of Mission in the DRC, Fabien Sambusi. He adds that many people who have fled their homes desperately need help to meet their basic needs. You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. A civil society member in the DRC says Islamist militants tied up at least 19 villagers and killed them with machetes and other weapons in a raid late yesterday. Maurice Mabella Musaidi told Reuters that other villagers fled but may have drowned as they tried to cross the Lamia River into Uganda. He and a Congo army spokesman says the attack in Benin's territories, Watalinga chiefdom, was carried out by the Islamic State-linked Allied Democratic Forces. Congo's army says it killed at least 6 of the militants that night without going into detail on the operation. Army spokesman Anthony Mwalushai put the civilian death toll so far at 11. A South African legal expert has been elected to serve as a judge on the International Court of Justice. The ICJ, known as the World Court, is the principal judicial body of the United Nations. It settles disputes among states in accordance with international law and gives advisory opinions on global legal issues. Darren Taylor reports.
Professor Dire Tladi is no stranger to international legal affairs. In September, the University of Pretoria law professor represented Sierra Leone at the International Tribunal for the Law of the Sea in Hamburg. Last Friday, members of the UN General Assembly and the Security Council voted to name him a judge on the International Court of Justice, the ICJ.
Gomez Robledo, Verduzco, Mexico, and Tladi Dire, South Africa, have been elected members of the International Court of Justice for a term.
I mean, it's incredible. Every international lawyer in the world dreams of being on the International Court of Justice. And for there not to have been a South African before and for me to be the first is obviously absolutely incredible.
Tladi was previously a legal advisor to the South African government. He's familiar with the workings of the UN, as he served as legal representative to the South African permanent mission to the UN between 2009 and 2013. Tladi has also acted for South Africa at the other global court, the International Criminal Court, the ICC.
The ICC, of course, is the most well-known, I think, court just because it deals with war criminals and people who perpetrate genocide. So it's things that are right in your face. But the International Court of Justice is, of course, the principal judicial organ. It is, as I have often described it, the apex court in the system. It is the only court in our system that has general jurisdiction, so it deals with all kinds of dispute. The only limitation, really, is that the dispute that it deals with are always between states. But as far as the subject matter is concerned, it deals with anything, whether it's international criminal law, boundary disputes, law of the sea, international human rights, whatever it is.
The ICJ was formed in the wake of World War II. It has 15 judges, each from a different nation, elected for 9-year terms and eligible for re-election. Several African judges have served on it, including from Nigeria, Cameroon, and Liberia. The ICJ has passed plenty of famous judgments. In 1986, it ruled that the United States violated international law by covertly supporting right-wing rebel groups against the Nicaraguan government. The ICJ ordered the U.S. to pay war reparations, but President Ronald Reagan's administration refused. Nicaragua asked the Security Council to enforce the judgment, but the U.S., a permanent member of the council, vetoed this. Since then, there have been complaints that the ICJ is toothless. Tladi tells VOA he isn't fazed by the criticism.
The decisions of the ICJ are not always immediately effective. But if one thinks, for example, about our own situation in South Africa and the fact that in 1971, the ICJ rendered an advisory opinion on the legality of South Africa's presence in Namibia. But really, the advisory opinion was about apartheid and the impact that that advisory opinion had on delegitimizing apartheid South Africa's claim to sort of rule in the manner that it might rule.
Tladi says he's more than ready for his first sitting as an ICJ judge. In mid-February next year, the court will hold hearings on the consequences of Israeli practices in Gaza. It's also expected to give opinions on the legal ramifications of Israeli actions in occupied territory, including East Jerusalem. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1. Then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. the number again is the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
Students from Kabarak University in Kenya's Rift Valley have developed a method for turning grass into flour and then fortifying it for human consumption. This new flour will be an ingredient for ugali, a staple food normally made from cornmeal, since that grain has become too expensive for many families. Juma Majanga reports from Nairobi.
You might think that Salome Njeri is clearing grass from her compound, but she is actually collecting raw materials to make flour. Njeri is among a group of four students at Kabarak University in Kenya's Rift Valley region who have come up with a way to turn the grass into flour. That flour can replace maize in the common Kenyan dish, ugali, at a time when many families are struggling with the high cost of living.
Considering the prices of maize flour, which is the staple food in Kenya, it has actually risen with above 50%. And we find that most people cannot be able to afford. Hence, we found a way out in which we can be able to make sure that food is actually affordable to each and every human being.
EcoStarch flour is made by converting grass to edible flour through enzymatic processes. The students have mostly been using Bermuda grass, but say any species of grass can work. As Innocent Bahati, a medical student at Kabarak University and one of the EcoStarch innovators, explains.
We cannot eat grass, right? But a cow can eat grass and digest it. So we found a way in which we can now convert the cellulose in grass, that is the bit you can't digest, to become now starch, edible starch, using enzymatic transformation, using enzymes, so that we can get something that is similar to maize.
The harvested grass is cleaned and dried at room temperature to preserve nutrients. Next, it is ground into powder, and then enzymes are added at specific temperatures for coloration. The mixture is then fortified with micronutrients and ready for human consumption. Kenya is among the sub-Saharan African countries experiencing alarming food crisis. The World Food Programme says the number of people in urgent need of food assistance in the country has risen sixfold since 2020 to 4.4 million in February. Henry Kiplagat, the Vice Chancellor of Kabarak University, believes investing in innovation can help in solving the hunger situation.
Actually, most of the innovations in the world produced by young people, the age of university-going students. It's very difficult to get a 100-year-old man or woman coming up with a new idea. So this is the future of the world, and we need to invest in them by setting aside resources to support their innovative work.
With the increasing threats from climate change and shocks on global supply chain systems, experts say African countries like Kenya should have homegrown solutions to the continent's food shortage problem. Michael Walehwa is a medical researcher and an associate lecturer at Kabarak University.
We can be able to come up with solutions that have been well researched upon and done so by researchers in our own country, to be able to look at the safety of these products and work out the production costs, so that we are able to produce products at rates that are relatively low.
After 3 years of research and trials, EcoStarch innovators are hoping to get a nod from authorities and get their product on the market. And by selling at a price 5 times lower than the average market price of maize flour, these student innovators hope to help less privileged families get ugali back on their dinner tables, albeit from grass. Juma Majanga, VOA News, Kabarak University, Kenya.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbil Yabaro, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.